The broadcast is off today due to travel for a family funeral. We'll be back soon. Today's program was originally recorded on May 7th, 2024.
Look, sometimes the best way to learn your lesson is to get beat, and Donald Trump needs to get beat. But look, to think Donald Trump's wholeheartedly a conservative is just fake news at its finest. Donald Trump's not a conservative. We have to move on as Republicans. We have to. And this is our first step. It's time to turn the page as Republicans and move on.
Well, good luck with that, Lieutenant Governor. But thank you for saying as much.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Oh, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, elsewhere in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN, up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's Queso, Eugene's KEPW, Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites, Blanketing Planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. We have got a lot to get to, as there is a lot going on, including voters in the great state of Indiana casting their vote in statewide primary elections on Tuesday. Even though the presidential contests are all but settled at this point, there are a number of contested primaries for governor, as well as U.S. Senate and the U.S. House on both the Democratic and Republican side in Indiana, though mostly on the Republican side, with a whole bunch of self-funded multimillionaires running for office.
We sure do have a lot of those.
Yeah, especially in our post-Citizens United world, and it seems like a whole bunch of them are running in Indiana. So, of course, we wish them the best of luck. And it reminds me how taxes are too low for rich people. Anyway, there are also a number of important referendums. Or is that referenda?
Yes.
Yeah, we'll see. on the ballot in a number of townships and counties regarding increases for revenue for public schools. So happily, I have seen few reports of problems for voters at the polls on Tuesday. Sometimes it takes a while before we learn about them, but we will keep our eyes on both that and any results of note as available on our next broadcast. In related-ish news about our 2024 elections, in any event, albeit in a completely different state, a battleground state, in fact, unlike the now very red state of Indiana. The outlet known as CyberScoop appears to have been the first media outlet on this one, reporting just over a week ago, quote, "the computer infrastructure of a Georgia county at the center of an effort to falsely claim that the state's 2020 presidential election was marked by fraud was struck by a cyber attack earlier this month that prompted state officials to sever Coffee County's access to statewide election systems." Yes, Coffee County. That county in the critical battleground state of Georgia, Coffee County, is a rural Republican-leading county in the southeastern part of the state. And no, this is not a rebroadcast from a year or two ago. This is a new cybersecurity breach in Coffee County following the infamous breach of voting system software and hardware by Trump operatives right after the 2020 election that we on this program were among the first to report with our longtime guest, Marilyn Marks, who was the first outside of Team Trump to actually learn about the original breach of the statewide voting system in Coffee that happened in January of 2021. CyberScoop reports that the latest incident prompted state election officials to shut down Coffee County's access to Georgia's statewide voter registration system last month. That would be April. The voter registration system known as Jarvis, quote, out of an abundance of caution, according to a notice that was sent out by Georgia's Secretary of State. The extent of the cyber attack on Coffee County remains unclear, as is who was behind it. But after an odd press release issued recently by the Board of Commissioners in Coffee about all of this, county officials had been responding to public records requests about it, about the incident specifically, by claiming that the county archiver was down for maintenance. It's a nice way to put it. Well, I've got a whole lot of questions about this, even as I am not sure there are, as of yet, a whole lot of answers. This is Georgia, after all, so it takes a while sometimes. But we will be joined for the latest on that and a number of related issues, including the long-awaited verdict in a long-running federal civil lawsuit hoping to make Georgia's Secretary of State stop forcing voters at the polling place to vote on unverifiable touchscreen voting systems in this year's critical elections to allow those voters to use verifiable hand-marked paper ballots instead. Marilyn Marks of Coalition for Good Governance, the plaintiff in that lawsuit and the discoverer of the initial Coffee County breach, will join us on this program for the latest on all of the above and more momentarily.
And it's really important for listeners to remember that Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, a Republican, has said that he is not going to apply any of the security patches that the U.S. Cybersecurity Agency recommended before the 2024 election.
Desi Doyen, why are you always being so mean to Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger?
We'll hear more about that coming up.
I guess we will. Anyway, as we go to air today, adult film star Stormy Daniels, a.k.a. Stephanie Clifford, was on the stand in Donald Trump's New York criminal trial on Tuesday regarding hush money payments made to her just before the 2016 election to keep her quiet about a sexual encounter she had with Trump years earlier while Trump's wife Melania was nursing their newborn son, all in hopes, according to the prosecutors, of helping Donald Trump cheat to win the 2016 election. Daniels testified in some detail about her several encounters with Trump after meeting him at a celebrity golf tournament, her one sexual encounter with him, which, based on her description, the prosecutor sounded somewhat less than consensual, and his subsequent entreaties, which she ultimately turned down, to have sex again, while he continued to hold out the idea of her appearing on his TV show, Celebrity Apprentice, at the time. The judge also denied a motion that was filed for a mistrial. It was filed mid-trial on Tuesday by Trump's attorneys based on some of the details that were offered by Stormy Daniels during her testimony. And court is just now wrapping up for the day as we go to air, with Daniels being pressed at the end of the day by Trump's defense attorneys in cross-examination, trying to paint her as a liar about all sorts of things. I'm just, the irony at this point of Donald Trump's lawyers trying to paint someone else as a liar in a court is just sort of popping into my head.
Does give you pause.
In any event, never fear. We will get all caught up on that, whether you like it or not, and everything else from Trump's criminal trial in New York this week in our weekly Trump trial Catch Up with a K program, also on our next broadcast. As much as that is being covered like crazy elsewhere, we're counter-programming a little bit today with some other stuff that is not receiving as much coverage, including that bizarre news out of the great state of Georgia about another cybersecurity breach. But speaking of Georgia and Donald Trump and the fallout from the 2020 election and what it means going forward into the 2024 election, a former top Georgia Republican elected official who had to defend his state's election administration after Trump tried to steal the results that year in 2020 has endorsed President Joe Biden and is urging other Republicans to join him. Now, at bradblog.com, some years ago, we used to give out what we called the rarely bestowed intellectually honest conservative award to Republicans who we could find who were at least honest about their politics and, yes, their conservatism. But I would say over the last decade or so, there have been few, if any, Republicans who actually are still either conservative or intellectually honest. So I don't know that I've been able to give out one of those awards in about 10 years, Des.
Yep, that sounds about right.
But I'm going to go ahead and call it here. Georgia's former Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan deserves the rarely bestowed intellectually honest conservative award today. Duncan, who refused to give credence to Trump's phony conspiracy theories about a stolen Georgia election and who opted not to run for re-election in 2022 due largely because of that, because of his rift with the disgraced former president. He explained why he was now calling for Joe Biden to be reelected in an op-ed published by the Atlanta Journal-Constitution on Monday. He discussed why he was not only not voting for Donald Trump, but yes, voting for Joe Biden instead and urging other intellectually honest Republicans to do the same, if any can be found. Now, former Lieutenant Governor Duncan was reportedly also drafted, by the way, by the No Labels outfit to run as a third-party presidential candidate this year, but he ultimately decided against that, too, because he was worried that his candidacy would simply serve as a spoiler allowing Trump to beat Joe Biden. So he gets credit there as well. Duncan also wrote a book back in 2021 about resuscitating the Republican Party post-Trump. Again, we wish him luck for that, but it's one thing for Republicans to speak out against Trump. There's a lot of them who do so, but it's another thing, especially for elected officials, or in this case, formerly elected officials, to go on record vowing to vote for Joe Biden, the Democrat, and encouraging fellow Republicans to do the same. Quote, unlike Trump, Duncan writes in his op-ed at AJC this week, I've belonged to the GOP my entire life. This November, he says, I am voting for a decent person I disagree with on policy over a criminal defendant without a moral compass. Thank you, sir. Duncan went on to critique several Republicans, and he calls them out by name. Folks who have been previously critical of the former president, but then have since relented in support of the, quote, Republican ticket in recent weeks, calling them out, in this case, by name in the first paragraph of his op-ed. Quote, it's disappointing to watch an increasing number of Republicans fall in line behind former President Donald Trump. This includes some of his fiercest detractors, such as Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu, and former U.S. Attorney General Bill Barr, who raised eyebrows during a recent interview by vowing to support the, quote, Republican ticket. This mentality, writes Duncan, is dead wrong. Yes, he says, elections are a binary choice. Yes, serious questions linger about President Biden's ability to serve until the age of 86. His progressive policies aren't too conservatives' liking. But The alternative, he writes, is another term of Trump, a man who has disqualified himself through his conduct and his character. The headlines are ablaze with hush money trial, with his hush money trial over allegations of improper record keeping for payments to conceal an affair with an adult film star. Most important, Trump fanned the flames of unfounded conspiracy theories that led to the horrific events of January 6, 2021. He refuses to admit he lost the last election and has hinted he might do so again after the next one. I'd say he's done more than hinted. But in any event, while it's really no surprise that Duncan is a critic of Trump's, his decision to endorse Biden instead, and to do so publicly and loudly, is a welcome change of pace from too many Republicans who have been just too cowardly to do so. If they really believe that Trump is a threat to democracy itself, as I do, hello, there's really no other choice but to prevent Trump from winning a second term. And it's very rare for too many elected, supposedly never Trump Republicans who claim to be struggling about, you know, who to vote for this November to go on the record with a vow to vote for Biden and do so on record in writing, encouraging others to do the same. But as Duncan himself notes in his op-ed, it is a binary choice, like it or not. At least it is this year. So, with that, congrats to the Brad Blog's latest winner of the more rarely bestowed than ever Intellectually Honest Conservative Award to Georgia's now former Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan.
Well, congratulations, former Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan. I only wish that Republican voters in many states would get a chance to hear that. I'm not sure that folks know about it.
Well, there's a lot else going on, which is one of the reasons we kind of wanted to help bring it out here. For the record, by the way, Duncan's successor as Lieutenant Governor after he chose to not run for re-election in 22 is Republican Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones in Georgia. He was elected in 2022, and he is currently under criminal investigation as part of Fannie Willis's RICO case against Donald Trump and 18 co-defendants for attempting to steal Georgia's 2020 election from Joe Biden.
Only the best people.
Anyway, the latest chapter in that particular story and how a new cybersecurity breach in Coffee County, Georgia, just last month could shake up the 2024 election. That is next on the broadcast with the Coalition for Good Governance's Marilyn Marks and Desi Doyen. I think today's one of those days, right?
Yes, it is.
Desi joins us for her latest Green News Report as time allows. I'm Brad Friedman, and you're listening to the broadcast.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com. As longtime listeners of this program should know well by now, we have spent a lot of time over the past several years on the now fairly well-known unlawful breach, illicit copying, and illegal distribution over the internet of the state of Georgia's statewide touchscreen voting and tabulation system, specifically in Coffee County, Georgia. That breach by a bunch of Trump supporters was organized by Trump attorney Sidney Powell after an infamous meeting in the Oval Office in December of 2020. It involved supporters traveling to the rural southeastern county of Coffee County in the critical battleground state, where they were allowed into the county elections office by its then election director on January 7, 2021, the day after the Trump-incited insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. The breach in Coffee County of the statewide voting system software has since resulted in criminal charges against five of the 19 alleged co-conspirators named in the broad racketeering conspiracy employed to steal the 2020 election results from Joe Biden in the Peach State. That case was brought against Donald Trump and his co-defendants by Fulton County District Attorney Fonnie Willis. Several of those indicted, including Sidney Powell, have since pleaded guilty in that case and are said to be cooperating with the Atlanta area prosecutors as the case moves toward trial. It is just one of four criminal indictments in four different jurisdictions now being faced by our disgraced former president, but this one is critical, if only because Georgia is such a critical battleground state this November. Now, one of those who also pleaded guilty in this case was Atlanta bail bondsman Scott Hall, who revealed this plot to longtime election integrity and security champion Marilyn Marks of the Coalition for Good Governance. Marilyn has been a frequent guest on this program over many years, and we were the first to air portions of a phone call that she received from Scott Hall in the course of her own longstanding civil lawsuit against the use of Georgia's 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting systems, in which Hall revealed the Coffee County breach that would eventually lead to a whole bunch of criminal indictments in Trump's Georgia case.
You know, I'm the guy that chartered the jet to go down to Coffee County to have them inspect all of those computers. And they scanned all the equipment, imaged all the hard drives.
They imaged the hard drives?
Yes.
How in the world did you get permission to do that?
We basically had the entire elections committee there. Okay. And they said, we give you permission. Go for it.
So that is how the Coffee County breach first came to light, thanks to, yes, our friend Marilyn Marks. Since then, the coalition's long-running civil case, known as Curling v. Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, aiming to replace Georgia's unverifiable touchscreens with hand-marked paper ballots at all Georgia polling places, finally went to trial earlier this year in federal court. The judge overseeing the case previously had banned, back in 2019, I believe it was, the use of Georgia's older, insecure, hackable, unverifiable touchscreen voting systems made by Diebold. And then Georgia's Secretary of State Raffensperger replaced them with new, insecure, hackable, unverifiable touchscreen ballot marking devices made by Dominion. And it is those systems, shown yet again to be hackable with little more than a ballpoint pen during the recent trial, that the coalition's suit hopes to see replaced with verifiable hand-marked paper ballots before the 2024 election. But U.S. District Court Judge Amy Totenberg has been, let's say, taking her time releasing her verdict since the trial ended earlier this year, making the likelihood of replacing those systems before November seemingly all but impossible at this point, or at least it seems to me. We'll find out if I'm right about that when Marilyn Marks joins us momentarily. In the meantime, the GOP-controlled state legislature in Georgia has adopted a new law that would force changes to the voting systems, blocking the use of QR codes that are printed out on the ballots produced by the touchscreen so that the human readable text supposedly used by voters to verify that the computers printed their votes accurately was actually used by the tabulator to tally votes rather than the human unreadable QR codes that are currently used to tally votes that are cast at every polling place across the state. And then, along with everything else, the Coffee County Board of Commissioners released this just over a week ago, and I'm reading from their press release here that was released on April 26 of 2024. The Coffee County Board of Commissioners announced, quote, on April 15, 2024, the United States Department of Homeland Security, DHS, and the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, known as CISA, contacted Coffee County, Georgia, to inform the county of the detection of unusual cyber activity necessitating a deeper and wider examination of Coffee County's IT infrastructure environment. A cyber incident was declared immediately by Coffee County and Coffee County's contracted information technology provider known as Coffee IT. Coffee County IT and DHS and CISA examined artifacts of the unauthorized access in the cyber systems and activity logs, in the network logs, and in monitoring systems. Upon examination, Coffee County's IT infrastructure showed no evidence of exfiltration of data and files, that would be the theft of data and files, but did indicate cyber activity by an unknown malicious actor or actors. Steps, they say, have been taken to further secure the network and protect Coffee County's IT infrastructure. Coffee County has informed federal authorities of the incident and is working diligently with these agencies to identify the origin and possible identity of the persons responsible. Now, that's a lot. And it's somewhat strange, at least to me, that Coffee County says it has informed federal authorities about the incident when it was the federal authorities, the Department of Homeland Security and the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, that supposedly informed Coffee County in the first place about what the county describes as the detection of unusual cyber activity. So what is going on here? How concerned should we be about this? And oh, by the way, what's the holdup in getting a verdict in the Curlin case? And does the state legislature's new bill banning the use of QR codes on ballots make Georgia's elections any safer or any more transparent to the public at all? Joining us now, once again, for the first time since the conclusion of the federal Curling trial earlier this year, is the founder and director of the Coalition for Good Governance, Marilyn Marks, the longtime troublemaker, muckraker, and election transparency and security superstar after my heart. Oh, Marilyn Marks, welcome back to the broadcast on an otherwise ridiculously busy day.
It is indeed. Thank you so much, Brad. I'm just so glad to hear your voice and be able to talk to your listeners.
Well, because it is such a busy day, we're probably going to have to move through a lot of this a bit more quickly than I might otherwise like. Please forgive me, but that just gives us an excuse to have you back on the show again sooner. Let me start with this bizarre so-called cyber incident in Coffee County. You put out, the coalition put out a notice, a press release this week, noting that this is the fourth known cybersecurity incident in Coffee. I assume that the first three were related to the repeated breaches in the Coffee County Elections Office?
Yes, in January 2021, including the one by Cyber Ninjas, et cetera.
Okay, so if this is the fourth, then it seems like the one we know the least about at this time. What, if anything, do we know about this CISA and DHS, well, this event that they informed Coffee County about in, mid-April?
Right. You read the press release, which is about all that we know. We informed some of the press. The press began to then press on Coffee County mm-hmm. and the Secretary of State for more details. And that Friday night when that press release was sent mm-hmm. out, was sent out at 5:30 at night, and then it became impossible to get anybody to talk about it. Today, there was a Coffee County Board of Elections meeting mm-hmm. where we know that the citizens went and asked a whole host of questions, but we don't have the feedback from that yet. So unfortunately, I can't tell you much, but mm-hmm. we do believe that from very credible reports, and including basically a statement made to the press, mm-hmm. that Coffee County executives hid and concealed this information from the Secretary of State mm-hmm. for some number of days. Well, that yeah, even no. though they knew of it, they did not tell the Secretary of State.
So they didn't tell the Secretary of State, and I don't know if we know what date when they finally did, but I do notice that they claim in the Board of Commissioners press release here, they claim that they were contacted on April 15, but they did not issue this press release until April 26th. That's 11 days later.
Right.
Do we know?
And they wouldn't have done that had we not just harangued them and harassed them.
Gotcha.
And the press doing the same thing.
Well, do we know if the attack either had anything to do with the election system in the county, the breach now, I guess, over 2 years ago at this point, or if there was any access gained to election-related files in the county? Do we have any of those details yet?
We certainly do not. Maybe they came out this morning, but we do not have that information at all available. But it is mysterious. And people look at this and say, this cannot just be coincidence that there have been two such cyber attacks this year on counties, one in Fulton, one in Coffee. That's it. The two counties that have a lot of information challenging Trump and the allies related to those breaches in the theft of the software to begin with.
I was also struck, as I mentioned, by the county's claim that it, at the end of their press release here, they say that they had notified federal authorities of the incident. But in the very same press release, just about three or four paragraphs earlier, Marilyn, the county says that DHS and CISA informed the county of the detection of, quote, unusual cyber activity in the first place. Can you explain that? And if we should be disturbed, by the way, that the federal government seemed to notice this activity in Coffee County in their own computer system before Coffee County actually noticed it?
Very good questions. We don't know. But it is interesting that CISA told Coffee. We've heard, you know, confirmation of that from various sources that it was CISA that told Coffee. Now, it could be that their statement at the end that they told federal authorities, that could, both could be true. CISA could have told Coffee, but Coffee could have called the FBI. We have heard some rumors that the FBI has been down there too, but I cannot confirm it. That it seems logical. So it could truly be that the feds, and one branch of the feds talked to Coffee, and Coffee called another branch of the feds.
Well, there was this, you know, I think you and I are both old enough to remember. I think it was back before the 2016 election, if I'm remembering it correctly, when then Secretary of State, now Governor Brian Kemp, had actually pretended that the federal authority was trying to hack into the Georgia voting systems. Remember that when
I do.
The federal system, the feds in that case were basically, they weren't trying to hack in, but they were checking the systems in a whole bunch of states to make sure that they were secure. It sounds like something similar to that happened here. No complaints yet from Kemp or the new Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, that the feds are trying to hack our system this time around?
Not so far. They were just complaining that Coffee County did not let them know. We would also love to believe that the many repeated calls from our friends, Free Speech for People, and we've joined them and others groups have to have CISA go look at the Coffee County system and investigate the breaches that happened back in 2021. You know, we thought that they were falling on deaf ears. Wouldn't we love to believe that maybe CISA had actually paid attention and was doing an investigation? Don't know.
Is it fair to say that there has never been a real investigation of that breach of the hardware, of the software by any entity, not by the Secretary of State, not by the State Board of Elections, not by the state law enforcement, et cetera?
Exactly right. No one has done an investigation other than a tiny bit of work done by Georgia Bureau of Investigation on the criminal side of this. No one has tried to analyze what really happened to the system, what fell apart, what are the risks to the future systems. But again, Brad, what we know, and this may segue into what you wanted to talk about the 2024 election, is what we know is that state's software is out in the wild, stolen by the Trump allies, distributed to others, and there has not been one iota of mitigation about that in advance of the 2024 election.
They are still using the very same systems, the same software, et cetera, that was used before the breach. We've mentioned on this show, we've reported with you, that even though the company, Dominion, has made patches to the software that supposedly takes care of certain security issues, the Georgia Secretary of State has refused to patch the systems in Georgia used across in every polling place, has refused to do so until after the 2024 elections for some reason. Marilyn,
yes.
Does any of this and the concerns about these systems, of course, but whatever happened with this recent cyber incident, does any of that, as you see it, strengthen the case that you have been making in your curling lawsuit that we're still waiting to get a verdict, but that the entire state must move to verifiable handmarked paper ballots? Does this strengthen it in any way?
It certainly does, because although the state would be the first to say, oh, but it's not connected to the internet, you know, the voting system is not. We all know that is just simply not true, that it may not have a direct live connection, but they continue to put dirty USB sticks in it, train and exchange data back and forth between the voting system and web-based computers. And there are so many opportunities for attacks on that voting system. And we see that also probably the voter registration system was exposed. So there are just so many opportunities for attack here, so much to worry about. And yes, it just makes for more compelling evidence that we need to have a secure system in November. As of yet, we certainly don't. The State Election Board and the Secretary of State have fought this every step of the way, and we are waiting for Judge Tuttenberg's ruling, hopefully any day now.
Well, and that was I mentioned briefly that during the trial, during this civil trial, the curling trial, trying to get rid of these machines, that one of your experts actually demonstrated in court. We talked about it on the show, but demonstrated in court that these systems could be hacked in a number of ways, but among them with a simple ballpoint pen by any voter at the polling place. I understand that correctly, right? I'm remembering
that is correct. That is absolutely correct.
All right. With that in mind, there's still no verdict from Judge Tuttenberg. So what, if anything, are you reading from that? What might it mean for the possibility of the state actually moving to handmarked, verifiable handmarked paper ballots before the critical November presidential election this year in this critical battleground state?
Well, the good news about all of this, as you well know, is they don't need to buy any new equipment. If the judge orders them not to use the old equipment, the touchscreen equipment anymore, they still have exactly the same scanners that can be used. All we need to do is just make sure they're thoroughly audited. Handmarked paper ballots that they can order within days, right? And it's not hard to get a few boxes of Sharpies. So the good news is that they could make this switch very, very quickly. Obviously, they need as much time as possible, so there is yet time for them to do this. Of course, we fear that if the court rules that the machines are unconstitutional, as we fully believe that we are and that we demonstrated in court, we fear that the state would immediately try to appeal that, and you never know exactly what may happen in such an appeal. But certainly the evidence is strong, including this last cyber attack on Coffee County, that the evidence is very strong that a secure system is needed. So and handmarked paper ballot is it.
So, and I believe Judge Tuttenberg understands all of that. She's been working on this case for years. I think she gets it.
Yes.
But she still has not released a verdict. Do you read anything from that?
We don't. You know, she is a very, very thorough judge, and you read any of her opinions, and they tend to, about these substantive matters, they tend to be lengthy, extremely detailed, extremely accurate, pointing back to the record, and there is a lot of record to point to here. So I'm assuming that she is working on a very thorough opinion.
Well, she's going to have to work on it quickly in order for because I suspect at this point the state will just appeal it, you're right, up the federal chain and even bring out the so-called Purcell principle and U.S. Supreme Court says, well, it's too late, too close to an election to make any changes that might confuse voters or election workers, et cetera. That's obviously the concern at this point, it seems to me. But then, Marilyn, there is the Republican state legislature. They have adopted a bill that if it's signed by Republican Governor Brian Kemp, I believe he's due to sign or veto that measure at any moment.
Right.
Today
is the deadline for any veto.
And it would remove, if he signs it, it would force the removal of these QR codes from the ballots that are printed out by the voting systems. It's those QR codes that are actually read by the computer tabulators when counting the votes rather than the human readable text. Now, you've studied this obviously closer than me, but it seems to me that even if they get rid of the QR codes, it will be no easier to know if voters actually verify their ballots accurately or at all after an election.
Right.
I mean, does this actually help in any way if they do remove the QR codes?
Well, good question. It might help a little because the QR code is one more vector for an attack. But you're absolutely right. The core fundamental problem of having a computer mark the ballot is the problem, because voters cannot do that hard work, truly they cannot, of verifying those 50, you know, questions mm-hmm. on that ballot and remembering them all and making sure that none of them were wrong and every one of them was there and none were added. Mm-hmm. So you're absolutely right. A computer marked ballot does not create a verifiable election. So while this would help a little, it's not a real practical answer. As well, the Republican legislature made a mess of that bill, and it's clear that it doesn't permit QR codes, but what it does require is technology that appears not to have even been invented yet. You can't really read what it is that they intended. We tried our best during the legislative session to tell them nobody can understand what this means, but they didn't want to change it. Plus, they didn't budget any money for new technology. So okay. it is a feel-good measure, and it should have never passed
but
in its form.
It won't go, even if it does get signed by the governor, as I understand it, and even if they come up with the money and the technology to carry it out, it doesn't go into effect until 2026? Is that
mid-2026 at the earliest. And that's okay. Assuming that they come up with money and technology.
By the way,
so I don't take much comfort in this bill.
No, I guess you wouldn't. And by the way, you mentioned that, you know, voters needing to do the hard work of verifying those computer printed ballots correctly or otherwise. Even if they do that, and it's something I've been trying to underscore for years to people, even if voters do that, and we know that they don't, we know that they make mistakes, et cetera, but even if they do it, there's no way to know after an election that anybody did it. There is no evidence that anybody actually verified the ballots correctly or at all after the election.
Correct.
All right.
Yeah.
Finally, Marilyn, I believe you were testifying to the Georgia State Board of Elections this week on
Correct.
Recounts in the state. You're arguing that state law requires they must be done by a hand count rather than, as Brad Raffensperger did after the 2020 election, by the same computer tabulators that scan the ballots in the first place. Why is that important as you see it, and how might a hand count versus a machine count have minimize the false claims of election fraud by Trump supporters back in 2020 and potentially here in 2024?
And to be clear, we're talking about recount.
Okay.
You know, CGG does not support the idea of having all these ballots originally counted by hand.
Mm-hmm.
We think they should go through the tabulator and then, as you know, be thoroughly audited mm-hmm. to be sure that the right winner was declared. But for a recount, the state law is quite clear. A recount is to be done by hand for obvious reasons, such as, you know, the machine is coded wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And if a recount is required, there is no assurance that if you just run the ballot back through the machine that's miscoded, you're going to get the same wrong answer.
Mm-hmm.
So a recount really needs to be done by hand. Brad Raffensperger just wanted to take a shortcut, and he had the state election board write a rule that basically ignored the state law. But even this morning at the state election board meeting, they were having long arguments about the 2020 machine recount and the hand audit. And there is still major controversy about the accuracy. All of that could have been solved had they done a manual recount as the law required, which would have allowed Trump to appoint a counter at mm-hmm. every single table, mm-hmm. handle every single ballot, and they would have had a hard time arguing then about counterfeit ballots, wrong counts, no transparency. A lot of the problems that we've lived with now for over 3 years would have been solved had they just followed the law and done a manual recount.
Allowing the public to oversee
yes.
what is
yes.
going on. And
yes.
I don't know how many years you and I, Marilyn, have both been saying it, but when it comes down to it, it is ultimately public oversight of the election system that stands, at least in my opinion, that stands the only chance of finally moving us beyond this horrific situation where we are, where, you know, people can make all kinds of claims about what happened in Georgia because, frankly, who knows if they're right or wrong? Nobody
exactly.
can tell. Nobody can
Nobody
oversee
can
it.
Tell.
It's all
exactly.
about public transparency, it seems to me, if we ever want to get confidence, at least, back in our voting system. Marilyn,
you're so right.
Marilyn, thank you for flying through a whole bunch of stuff very quickly with me. I suspect we'll be talking to you again hopefully soon if Judge Totenberg ever comes out with her ruling. I look forward to talking to you one way or another about that in the weeks ahead. Thank you for joining us on
Me
a
too.
Crazy day. Marilyn Marks is the longtime expert advocate for free and fair elections as the executive director of the Coalition for Good Governance, fighting the real fight for election integrity and transparency. You can find and support them at coalitionforgoodgovernance.org. You can and should follow Marilyn on the site still known as Twitter at Marilyn R. Marks, the number one, Marilyn R. Marks one, or Coalition Good Governance. Coalition Good GV. Marilyn, always great speaking with you.
Thank you.
Good luck. We'll talk soon.
Sounds good.
You know, I will tell you this before we get to your GNR, Desi Doyen.
Yeah.
You know, for all the years that we have been fighting at Brad Blog and here on the Bradcast for election transparency, it's ironic, but not unexpected, that these Trump supporters are using the very things that we have been warning about to make their case.
Yes.
They're able to say, well, you know what? You don't know. I don't know. Nobody knows what the results actually are. And that's because places like Georgia do not use transparent systems. They use touchscreen systems that nobody can actually see into. Now, there are fewer and fewer states that actually do that, but there are still a lot. And yes, I know that Republicans, Trump supporters, they're going to make these claims no matter what kind of system we use, no matter how much transparency there is or isn't. But that's the place to start. If you want to get your confidence in the voting system back, that is the place to start. Don't hide anything, even from the liars and frauds.
Yes.
Let them see everything.
Public oversight, hand-marked paper ballots so the public can watch them being counted, really does help.
It's not going to solve the problem 100%, but it does make it harder for the bad guys to lie. And these guys are really good at lying. All right, let's take a quick break here. And we will, speaking of liars, let's take a quick break. And we'll come back with Desi Doyen and our Green News Report. No, you're not the liar.
Okay.
It's all the people that unfortunately have been lying about our climate for so many years.
Climate science deniers, yes.
That, well, the results of that lie, unfortunately, are coming horrifically clear to many people. Green News Report is next on the Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial. Hey, this is Brad. Here at the Bradcast and bradblog.com, we fight for election integrity all year around. like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to help us remain on your public airwaves and completely independent. Please help us continue that fight over your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast.
Okay, a little bit of breaking news coming in while I was talking to Marilyn there. Let me give it a look-see, and we'll get back to you on just how breaking and important it is after our latest Green News Report.
Water levels in some areas are nearly as high as they were during Hurricane Harvey.
Relentless rains trigger widespread floods in Houston and southern Brazil. April 2024 was the hottest April ever recorded. Plus,
folks, this is about safety, but it's also about basic fairness.
President Biden unveils billions in new funding to remove and replace toxic lead water pipes.
All of those long overdue billions and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We're honored to be joined today by Shanna Gray, who owns a vegan restaurant. Supposed to be really good. I'm not into the vegan stuff, I must say, but I'm going to have to try this.
Viva Las Vegan! This is your Green News Report.
We're going to come and try that vegan food. I don't know if I'm going to like it.
Okay, Desi Doyen. Vegan? Anyway, what do you got for us today?
Well, the top story is April 2024 was the hottest April on record since record keeping began in the 1850s. That's according to Europe's climate agency, Copernicus. April was the 11th month in a row to set a new heat record for that month. The world's oceans were also hotter than in any previous April. That's for the 13th consecutive month. Scientists say that humanity's burning of fossil fuels is the primary driver of these new heat records, with a boost from an intense El Nino that is starting to wane.
Starting to wane, but we're still keeping our record hot months.
Yep, and those rising temperatures on land and sea are intensifying extreme weather and causing major impacts to people around the world, including the ongoing deadly heat wave across Southeast Asia and widespread catastrophic flooding in Kenya. And in Brazil, where relentless rains and historic floods in the south have killed more than 80 people, destroyed roads and bridges, and cut off entire communities. Dozens still missing, more than 20,000 displaced. Electricity, water, and communications knocked out. Officials said it is, quote, one of the worst disasters that the country has registered in recent history.
And that's a country that has registered a lot of disasters.
In the Washington Post, Brazil's President Lula said it's the third record flood in the same region of the country in less than a year. And he blamed the devastation on the failures of the global community to respond to climate change.
Yep.
In Houston, Texas, flooding from days of intense storms forced evacuations, school closures, and hundreds of high water and rooftop rescues. One confirmed death as we go to air, a 4-year-old boy swept away in the floods. Some areas saw upwards of 9 inches of rain in just hours, with flood levels nearly as high as Hurricane Harvey's historic floods back in 2017. Except this wasn't a hurricane. Dry weather is allowing cleanup to begin. Local news highlighted how homeowners are increasingly trapped between repeated flood disasters and skyrocketing home insurance rates as our climate crisis intensifies.
It's just disheartening with one of my neighbors. She got probably 4 foot of water in her house, and her flood insurance this year went up to $5,000, so she did not renew.
Man-made global warming is supercharging the water cycle across the United States. That's according to a new analysis from nonprofit data firm Climate Central. It's bringing heavier precipitation extremes and, of course, related flood risks. The data show that since 1958, the number of days in the U.S. with extreme precipitation events has increased in every major U.S. region, 60% increase in the Northeast, and that trend is expected to continue with future warming. Some better news, the Biden Department of Energy announced nearly $100 million in federal investment in rural communities to fund clean electricity projects from Alaska to Alabama, with funding going to install solar projects, batteries, power lines, and heat pumps.
So there's that.
And finally, late last week, President Biden unveiled the third round of $3 billion in federal funding to replace unsafe, toxic lead water pipes and service lines in communities across the country. Lead pipes leach toxins into drinking water that cause a spectrum of illnesses and brain damage in children. Biden has committed to replacing all lead pipes across the nation within a decade. Here he is making the announcement in Wilmington, North Carolina.
There's no safe level of lead exposure, none.
Right.
The only way forward is to replace every lead service line that connects Americans to clean water. Until the United States of America, God love us, deals with this, how can we say we're a leading nation in the world?
Well, we can't. But happily, we're finally getting started. Sadly, I don't have much snark to add to today's report. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Lead in the paint, lead in the soil, lead in the pipes, lead in the water, lead in our sons, lead in our daughters, learning disabilities, attention span shorter, get the lead out.
Yeah, get the lead out indeed. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen.
Yeah, so at least there's that.
I mentioned prior to the GNR there that there was some breaking news, a lot of folks coming in with headlines on my iPhone here, like Washington Post. Breaking news, Donald Trump's classified documents trial in Florida delayed indefinitely, judge says, which, of course, makes it sound like it's never going to happen. We will see when and if it does happen, but really not much of a surprise here. There had been a trial date in that stolen documents case. Donald Trump stole hundreds of highly classified national security documents, refused to give them back to the government. He's been indicted by special counsel Jack Smith on that one. There's a Trump-appointed judge, a corrupt Trump-appointed judge who was overseeing that case down in Florida. The trial had been scheduled for this month, for May 20th. Everyone knew that was not going to happen. Now she has made it official, pushing it back until we don't yet know when, saying there's issues that still need to be resolved with the classified documents. Of course, we know that there are those issues and that they haven't been resolved in large part because of the judge, Eileen Cannon, who is refusing to move this case along to get them resolved. In any event, no real surprise there. We'll talk about it more on our Trump trial catch-up show tomorrow with,
yes,
I think, Digby and Keith Barber joining, yes, us again. All right, that's it. My thanks again to Marilyn Marks of the Coalition for Good Governance, to Desi Doyen, our producer, and to you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, download it for free anytime at bradblog.com, where we'll hope you will hit one of those donate buttons to keep us on your public airwaves. Drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter, I am The Brad Blog. See you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.